Hi, everybody. Alan Arnett here on Thursday, May the 5th, 2022. And I am just ecstatic to have some of the world's elite weather forecasters, including one who's an emperor. Yeah. I'm going to tell you about that in just a second. So let me start off. Let me introduce the team here. Michael Fagan, a lot of you know Michael. He's been forecasting weather on ever since, was it 1923? I think you did Mallory, didn't you?
Thanks for the introduction. 2003 is a more precise date.
Okay. And Michael's part of Everest Weather, the team there, and they've been doing everybody from the late Uli Steck to adventure consultants and on and on and on. Chris Tomer here in Colorado, meteorologist down in Denver. They're KVDR. There's too many four-letter acronyms down there, Chris.
Exactly.
Chris not only is a mountaineer here in Colorado, but also a world-class basketball player. What position did you play?
Oh my gosh. I was like, if you're familiar with numbers like a three, I was mainly like a rebounder and an assister.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, everybody's got to be good at something, right?
Yeah.
But Chris has been forecasting. He does a lot of mountains all around the world for a lot of, you know, individuals. Plus right now, a lot of people are familiar with the Full Circle Everest. He's helping them out with their forecasting. And finally, Mark de Keyser. Mark just told me that his last name is actually Dutch for emperor. So I thank you, sir. We're honored to have your presence here. Mark is really interesting. I love your story. You cut your teeth in Antarctica, right?
Yeah, it's I've been 17 summer seasons in the Antarctic. I started with the British Antarctic Survey in 1996. And I've done now, I think, 13 or 14 seasons with the Antarctic Logistics and Expeditions in Union Glacier near Mount Vincent. So, I've been around there for about 4 years, I guess, in the Antarctic.
Hey, just real quickly before we get into Everest, give us a couple of headlines, bullet points. So what's the difference between forecasting the weather in Antarctica versus on Mount Everest?
Mount Vincent, which I can compare with Mount Everest, is only just like a little element of my job there. It's mainly aviation meteorology I'm doing there. We have a big plane flying between Punta Arenas and Union Glacier, landing on the Blue Ice runway. And me, together with other two forecasters, we make the weather forecasts for those aircrafts. Also, our local Basler and another aircrafts need forecasts. So that's the bulk of the job we have. But next to that, we make the forecast for the expeditions that's key to the South Pole, for the climbers on Mount Vincent. But just that's a little part of the job.
Is it more unpredictable in Antarctica than it is in the Alps or the Himalayas?
I'm not sure, but I think it's pretty good because it's like of course you don't have like the resolution of the observation network. The model is not as accurate as here, as in the Western world. But we've come from a far away, and I think since I started in 96, we have made a lot of steps forward, and I'm pretty sure we can make a very good forecast for Union Glacier and for the Antarctic.
Nice. Michael, let's get going on Everest. So what's your overall assessment right now for, you know, the weather in the Himalayas, on Everest? Give us kind of a current snapshot of what you see.
Yeah, so you were asking on the earlier email to look at a recap between, let's say, the middle of April till now. And looking at that and comparing with last year, I remember last year the jet stream was moving in and out of the region from middle of April till now.
Yeah.
And this season, the jet stream's not been over the region. So that's one big difference, and probably one big reason why the Chinese were able to put, I think you mentioned, 50 people on the summit going through the Chinese side. As far as snow, I just think there was one day that there were some snow issues. So it's been pretty reasonable weather in the big picture. Now there's been other seasons where we've had cyclones occur in April. I believe 2019 was one year. I think it was Fanny, and then I think it was 2008 we had another tropical cyclone. I think Chris is going to talk about what's coming down the pike. So those are the big differences. And again, so far this season, knock on wood, has been pretty reasonable, again, given the amount of summits that we've already seen.
Any idea why the Jet is not playing this year?
No, it's, I've seen some other seasons where the Jet is out of the region, and I think we could all be rest assured at some point between now and the end of May, we'll see the jet stream that will be placed over Everest. And again, I don't have a good handle exactly why it's not been over us, but I think in due time we'll probably see it.
So yeah, I mean, it's always interesting that this year is kind of unusual because normally we hit the first couple of weeks in May and the weather kind of turns bad. It's okay at the end of April, then it turns bad, and then the window opens up. Hey, Mark, looking at the last winter in over the Himalayas, what about the moisture? Was it anything unusual? Did we have more snowfall, less snowfall? And what do you think the guys are going to see? Direct, actually, they're right now, I think they're arriving at Camp 4 to fix the ropes to the summit. Do you think they're going to see more snow, less snow? What's your best guess?
I have not been looking exactly at what happened last winter, and it's pretty difficult to have a good eye on that. It's very difficult to find the sources to see what's happening over winter in with respect to snowfall. What I mostly do is I have a talk with my one of my teams, of it with several teams, with the guy who's in base camp and who has an impression maybe of about what's happening and then what happened, and sometimes he can tell by looking at the surroundings if it's an experienced guy and tell me if there's a lot of snow or not. But I don't have the impression. With I was talking with I think it was with Stuart Peacock a few days ago, and he told me that this were only like a few centimeters of snow and not that much. So I don't expect any big risk for big snow amounts in the upper layers. You never know, of course, but what I saw on the most recent model output the last few days, I think it was in the model 2 or 3 days ago for the first time, is like above 8,000 meters is going to be a real, like, I would not say a heat wave, but the temperature is going to rise from what it's now at the summit. Let's say it's minus 28 or minus 29, and then and maybe in 12 hours' time, it's going to rise up to minus 20 degrees. So it's we're going to get my 7 to 8 degrees in the minimum of time. So I've put out a warning for because with this period with really like high temperatures, extremely high temperatures at that level is going to last at least for, I would say, 48 to 72 hours. So I've put in a warning in my forecast, especially for Seracs. If it's so warm, there's always a potential for avalanches. There's a potential for if you go to the ice fall, that due to the instability, that something can fall down, and there's an increased danger for that. So that's why,
Yeah, that is incredibly warm for the summit. That's a great lead into the question I wanted to ask you, Chris, is that I guess there have been record high temperatures in northern India. I mean, up into like 40 degrees of centigrade. You know, what is that? What is that in our temperature? Huh? More than
Gosh, it's
100.
anywhere from 115 to like 125.
Yeah. So what are the, and that I understand that's also kind of seeped into southern Nepal. So what's what's your interpretation of that heat wave and building on what Mark just said with the high temperatures on the summit? I mean, still it's cold, but still
Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely.
relatively, yeah. What are you thinking about those temperatures and the impact?
I got to tell you, I look at it, and I know Michael touched on this earlier. I look at it and I think this heat has to have something to do with what we're seeing right now. With this kind of heat, you got to have a big high pressure. You got to have a big high pressure to bake this kind of heat in. And I think that with the placement of this heat and the high, I think that's kind of why we're seeing the jet pushed away. I mean, I'm looking at it. I don't see much wind at all. If I were sitting at home and this was a perfect setup for the faster teams or that select teams that I think some of those guys have those high, they phone home and they say, you can come over, fly over now. You can summit in 5 days. I think this is the perfect kind of season for this. You've got this big bubble of high pressure with this high, these hot temps. The jets looks like it stays minimal for the next 10 days, 10, 15 days. I mean, I think we could see some, if you want to summit, I'd say, go do it. Let's just go for it. You could get in and out and be off the summit, clean things up and done in no time.
So do you think this brings an early end to the season? I mean, will we see an early
monsoon?
Will we see an early, will we see an early monsoon that'll bring an end to the season?
I don't know about that. I mean, we can't see that far out, but I mean, just looking at it right now, it's like, I just feel like if it's not going to be one of those years where we get 1 day window or a 2 day window where we could have days where these guys, the teams could just keep going up to the summit, the next team, the next team, the next team, and you could be in and out in no time.
Yeah. This could be another one of those days, those seasons where we have 11 consecutive, you know, low wind days.
I remember that.
In summit, as opposed to the three, when we had that infamous, you know, picture of the queue between the South Summit to the summit. Yeah. So if you're saying 10 to 15 days and looks like you, Mark, our Mark and Michael are not disagreeing with that. So if today's May 5th, they get the ropes to the summit by the 10th. I mean, we could see summits daily through the rest of the month.
But well, when I think about the forecasting in 2 weeks time, it's if I'm doing that, It's always wrong. It's always wrong. You have to be very, very careful with that. You can raise hopes for the guys. You have 2 weeks of nice weather, 2 weeks of low winds at 8,000 meter plus, and then you start to see little changes.
Oh yeah, inevitably. But I'll tell you to think about this also. Think about how we've seen the track of this potential cyclone changed numerous times. And one of the reasons we're seeing that change numerous times is because of the strength of this high. The winds, the guiding winds are so light with this thing. I mean, the track is all over the place. You guys are seeing this thing.
So let's jump in that, Michael, you jump in here, that there's a disturbance happening in the Bay of Bengal, and that's typically what drives the jet stream off of the summit in a normal season. You know, these typhoons come in and high pressure moves the jet stream away to at least for a few days, thus the weather window. You've been identifying some movement in the Bay of Bengal, but to your point, Chris, it's just all over the place right now and it's kind of unpredictable. Michael, what are you seeing relative to the typhoon activity?
Yeah, well, that is the wild card, and many of us look at five different forecast models, and for better or for worse, they're all showing different resolutions in terms of date when it hits landfall, the track of it, and each progressive forecast model is showing this potential tropical cyclone moving away from Everest. But a lot could change between now and then. They're looking at perhaps a May 15th, May 16th timeframe where it hits landfall, and then where it goes after that is anyone's guess at this point. So we'll have to definitely keep track of it, but it's definitely becoming a challenge, which isn't unusual when you're looking at a forecast model for 7 days out. As Mark says, yeah. we have more confidence 4 or 5 days versus, 7 days and beyond, but we'll need to track this.
You guys remind Messner once was quoted as saying that when you look at a mountain, it's all the route is always longer and it's always harder than you think. And I think the meteorologist version of that is my forecast is always wrong.
Well, I wanted to ask Michael. I'm aware that you use 5, 6, or 7 models. Yeah. I look at several models as well, but I have my preferred model I use. But if you like have five models and they all give a different solution, you have a problem, don't you? Then what are you going to use to transfer to your people on the mountain? It's like, I'm not saying that using one model is the holy grail, because you have to keep your mind open for other solutions. But on the other hand, if you use like 5-6 models, I'm always very cautious with that, because it's like, then this model is giving this, that model is giving that, but then what are you going to do? It's like,
well, I like to put a weighted average in the models. I always want to see what they're doing in the big picture. And then certain models tend to do better. I think the European model tends to do better on wind speed. And actually the U.S. Navy model does pretty good on the cyclone track. So you pick different models based on their strengths. So, you're right. If you're looking totally at 5 or 6 and they're all saying different things, that's one issue. But I do like to put more focus on certain models, depending on what I'm looking at.
Hey, Chris, we got about 5 minutes left here. I want to ask you, in the spirit of what exactly we're talking about, a lot of people in the mountain, they just simply go on their computer and they look at Windy or Mountain Forecast is a very popular one, and they take that as certain. And what you three professionals offer is that exactly what Mark and Michael are talking about, is that human curated aspect to it, using interpretation as opposed to interpolation, where the computer models just take a certain point and then they just interpolate, through the altitudes. Chris, I know you and I have talked about this before, and you always say there's a time and place for both of them, but kind of like right now, and this is, that's high pressure you're talking about, impacting the potential typhoon and these high temperatures. How do you think these computerized internet models are going to play out?
I think you're seeing it here with just the three of us. We all sort of bring something different to the table. It's how we want to interact with our clients. Mark, obviously, he's going to have his specific way he communicates with his teams, and does he give his own opinion plus what he sees with the models. I like to do that. I like to communicate, kind of give my own take on what I'm seeing, because I mean, ultimately they're paying me for, a number of things, and I think they're paying me for what I'm seeing. So I'm going to give you a little bit extra, and I'm watching all of these, but I can tell you Michael and Mark are looking at these and they're spotting, okay, this model seems to be really locked on to what's truly happening, because we're talking to the teams, they're communicating with us and telling what they're seeing up there. So we can match that to what we're seeing with all of the models and say, this one is got the right track for, let's say, the cyclone next week. So that's the one we're gonna hone in on for a while. And that's what we're probably gonna communicate with the teams. What you see on Mountain Forecast is one iteration of hundreds, thousands of forecasts out there. It's okay, but when your life is on the line, you really want to know. You want an expert opinion, plus, you want to know what the raw data is. So that's the way I approach it.
Mm-hmm. When my wife asks me if it's going to rain to put out the laundry outside, then I tell her, look at Windy or look at the other model.
Or look out the window.
Or look out the window, yeah.
Michael, any comments?
I handle it a couple ways. I'll paint the picture of my interpretation of the forecast. And sometimes I don't say, well, go on this date or don't go on that date. Because, each team is at a certain situation of making decisions on to go to the summit. It's going to depend on the team's strength. Are they acclimated? So I'm going to paint the picture of what the weather is on certain days, but I tend to not say go on this day, because there's a lot of things these teams need to consider. So, I give them all the weather that I'm seeing. But again, the decision's up to the team, because I'm dealing with some pretty experienced teams, and there's a lot of things that they need to take into consideration.
Does the Sherpas always tend to say the full moon is an indication of an auspicious day? Is there any correlation there?
I don't know about that one.
Well, if you see, I wouldn't think so, but I don't know.
if you see the full moon, then it's obviously clear sky. So then
yeah, it's clear sky.
That's my logic, you know.
Wow. That cut to the chase. Thanks a lot, Mark. Okay, so what I'm hearing though is a general consensus that at least for the next few days, short term, looks like the rope fixing team's got some pretty good weather, low winds. Looks like it's going to get a little bit warmer, so they've got to keep an eye on, you know, soft snow instability in the Khumbu icefall. I think the Chinese are all completed on their side, so that's probably over for the season. All right, I'm going to wrap up. We got 1 minute left. I've got one question for each of you. I will personally deliver a yak to your home if you guess the first day of the first member, not the rope team, the first client, the first member. I want a date. Michael, give me a date.
May 10.
Chris?
I'm going to go 8th.
Ooh, Mark.
I'm going for the 12th.
Okay. All right. So now I got to figure out how to get a yak. All right. Hey, guys, thanks so much. I really appreciate you joining us. And I know that we send our best to all of your teams that they're going to be safe while they're climbing.
Thanks, guys.
All right.
Thanks.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.